Welcome to Linux Journal Insider 197, the web development issue for September 2010.
Sponsored by the fine folks at GigiNet Cloud.
This episode of Linux Journal Insider is brought to you by GigiNet. GigiNet Cloud is one of the only places on the web that you can deploy a cloud server in as little as 60 seconds. Nearly limitless and easily scalable, GigiNet Cloud provides the ability to take snapshots and will soon offer the ability to share templates in the coming weeks, all while enjoying unlimited private bandwidth. Customers only pay for what they use. Visit www.giginetcloud.com for more information on the world's fastest cloud server deployment and future enhancements in store. That's www.giginetcloud.com. We'll see you there.
I'm Sean Powers, and with me is Kyle Rankin. Hi, Kyle.
Hey, happy summer to you.
Yes, happy summer. And especially happy summer for me because next week I will be getting a house. It sounds like, you know, Christmas for giants, but yes, our house finally arrives, like over 6 months after the fire. Our house is arriving on Tuesday. It's actually Saturday right now. And it arrives on Tuesday, so I am excited. Now, a lot of the people listening were part of my horrible ordeal with the mortgage company to release insurance money. So another thank you to everybody that was there helping me figure out who to contact at Chase Manhattan. But it worked out, and we get a house, so that's exciting. How about you? Do you have anything as exciting as getting a house?
let me think. I got a chicken burrito earlier for lunch. That's about the height of my day. So for this next upcoming week, I'm actually going to be going to the Black Hat conference and then, you know, back to back with DEF CONs. So it'll be my first year at both. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Exciting. So is your plan to be on the Wall of Sheep? I hear that's really exciting for newcomers.
Well, we'll see if I get there. When I know it's a really hostile network. So my plan was, you know, I'm just going to take my N900, not even take a laptop. And then I'm just going to stick to the GSM network, not associate with any wireless access points. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you know it, this year seems to be the year of GSM hacking. So, you know, I don't think I'm safe anything that I do. I have some plans to go on lockdown once I get there. But, yeah, it seems like whatever your plan is, there's somebody there already waiting to exploit you. So it'll be fun.
Awesome. Awesome. My first article is Large-Scale Website Infrastructure and Drupal by Jared Bittner and Nate Haug. I'm assuming Haug. But
anyway, I would say Haug.
Haug. Okay, that's what we're going to say. Now, the reason that this is really cool for me, I'm not a web developer, so you might think that this issue would be blah to me. But this is exciting because I'm a network administrator, and this really focuses on how to ramp up your infrastructure to support a lot of traffic. Now, Drupal in general, as far as implementing it, there's like a steep learning curve. I don't know if anybody's used Drupal, Kyle, if you've used Drupal, but it's a great content management system, but it does take a little bit of learning to get used to it. And one of the problems is once it's going, it works fine until, you know, you get slash dotted or you get on the dig front page and then your website just crumbles. Well, this goes through some real practical ways to scale your infrastructure to handle that kind of thing. And it's, I mean, right down to the simple things, how to adjust your Apache processes to make sure that there's enough without overloading your RAM. I was just really excited by this article because as somebody who has to run websites, not necessarily develop them, but, you know, the guy running the servers underneath, this is a really informative article.
Yeah, I thought it was a really great article, too. I have used Drupal in the past. That I used it far enough along so that I was starting to work on writing my own plugins and that sort of thing. But I thought, I mean, even if you aren't a Drupal user yet, this is a really great article just because the first half of the article really is not so much Drupal focused as it's sort of the LAMP stack and telling you how to, all of these, ways that you can scale a LAMP stack to handle high traffic. So, you know, even if you're not yet a Drupal user, you should really check out this article. You know, it'll tell you how to do it right. So, speaking of doing it, the next article, the one that I'm going to cover, is Doing It the App Engine Way, or possibly Doing IT the App Engine Way. It's by Paul Berry, and it's about, this article is about Google's App Engine. So this is one of the many new cloud services that are out there. And essentially what the article talks about is how to write applications that in Python that you can run on Google App Engine. Essentially what this is it allows you to write an application without actually having a web server of your own to run the application on. You write the application, you register with Google, and then Google will host your site for you. And basically they'll host it for free up until it gets, I believe it's like 5 million page views. And per month. Once it gets up that high, they'll start charging you. But basically, this article tells you how to start from scratch with configuring Python, with configuring App Engine, and has some really good sample scripts that you can set up so that you have a nice little web application that you can put in the cloud. It looks, you know, pretty straightforward, pretty easy. If you're familiar with Python at all, you should be able to get up to speed really fast.
And, you know, the thing I really like is that since it's free up until some significant traffic. I mean, you know, yeah, 5 million page views a month is pretty significant. And, you know, that's a great way where you can learn what you're doing without have to worry, you know, without worrying about, well, what's this going to cost me for hosting and all that kind of stuff. I just really think it's a great way. And it's good for Google because then they get some serious, you know, people that are using web apps, and the good ones they end up getting money for. But it's a really neat way that you can edit it no matter, or that you can run web applications no matter where you are. Speaking of no matter where you are, that was a stretch for a segue, I know, but the next article...
You kind of phoned that one in.
I did a little bit, yeah, I did, with a mobile phone. Yeah, you see, you even set me up and I flopped there. Anyway, the next article I'm going to talk about is developing portable mobile web applications, which sounds pretty basic, but it's by Rick Rogers. And what's really great about this article is, now, the web's been around for a long time, and I don't know about you, but as I've gotten older, my screen on my desktop has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Like now I have a 24-inch widescreen monitor on my desk. However, the web itself, a lot of the access is getting smaller and smaller. It's really bizarre because, you know, we went from these huge screens to netbooks, and now I don't know the percentage. I'd be interested to know the percentage of web traffic that goes to a mobile device. But programming for mobile devices is huge now. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago when we talked about web development, it was for the desktop screen. Now it's for, you know, a 480 pixel wide screen or less. So anyway, this is talking about mobile web applications and focusing on two things, the Android platform and also the iPhone platform. And yes, we said iPhone, but a lot of the websites that iPhone users access are running Linux, of course, right? So it's important to be able to develop for those clients. And both are using WebKit, which is really nice because it looks consistent across those two major platforms. And Rick goes through and talks about how to develop for a mobile platform and how to recognize that it's a mobile device accessing you and stuff. It really kind of tweaks your mind on how you need to develop things and the ways that you can do that so that mobile web users have an experience that wasn't designed for that 24-inch wide screen.
Well, and the other thing I like about this article is it's a nice primer on HTML5 as well, because a lot of this article is talking about using features that are just now being added in HTML5. And so to me, it just seemed like a nice introduction if you haven't really thought about features in HTML5 yet.
Very true, because, HTML5 is the way that things are going, because it allows for that local data on the device so that you can get that more rich experience. And really, it's a great app, not just for, you know, mobile devices. I mean, HTML5 is something that's going to be useful no matter what kind of device you're programming for.
Well, yeah, it seems like it's really designed to run anywhere. You know, speaking of something that's designed to run anywhere, so the next article I'm talking about is web applications with Java / JSP. Christopher Schultz wrote this, and this article is, you know, the other articles have talked about the LAMP stack, talking about developing applications in Python, developing applications for the mobile web, and in this article, Christopher's talking about Java and how to write web applications with Java JSP. Now, there's a lot of websites out there. You know, a lot of people probably in the Linux Journal audience are used to the traditional LAMP stack, but there are a lot of websites out there that are written strictly with Java to do all of the intelligence on the app. And so this article goes into great detail on what the difference between a WAR and a JAR is, how to set up your WAR files, how to set up your JAR files, and a lot of great simple code so that if you want to set up a Java application to serve, you know, a Java web application, it gives you all of the bits that you need to get going and explains, you know, all the different steps that are involved. So, you know, it's very useful if you already know some Java, of course. But yeah, you know, JSP stack can be a little complicated, so it's good to have an article like this that really explains it well and is very clear and walks you through the process.
What, you know, it's funny, what I like about this article is that it's way over my head. And don't get me wrong, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's very approachable. I can read it and understand it, but I know that it's appealing to the crowd where some of the articles that may appeal to me, they think are a little bit light. So this is an article that talks more about Java and JSP than my brain can comprehend, and I think that sometimes that's a good thing. So,
well,
you
like Java, at least in terms of the beverage.
I do, although I can't have caffeine anymore. But Kyle, I gotta say, the number of times today that you've said lamp stack, I think that we should start a lamp stacking team where we just get a bunch of lamps, shades, no shades, you know, maybe those could be our teams, and we can just stack lamps to see.
Well, I tell you, the next conference, you know, I think that we should both build a Ford and build a lamp stack.
Yes.
I think take a nice picture of all the lamps in a couple hotel rooms stacked on each other.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that the hotel folks wouldn't mind at all. Because
no, they would encourage that.
And we could say, this is optimized, baby. Anyway, we've derailed.
We could set up a load balancer across the lamp stack.
We could.
Yeah. And I just hope it doesn't crash.
Yeah, me too. Well, if it's a Linux lamp stack, which it would have to be, right? I mean,
it should be solid, yeah.
Exactly. All right. Anyway, speaking about Linux, yeah, I know it's a rough segue when it's Linux Journal Insider. But I want to read a letter from the mailbag, right? We still don't have our mailbag theme. Mail time. I don't know, but let's this is from.
I like that one. Let's cut that one out and use that one every time now.
I stole that from Pee Wee Herman though, so I don't know that we want to keep that one. But anyway, yeah, that was from Pee Wee's Playhouse. But anyway, it's about Rockbox. Now I did a video review of Rockbox a while back, and Dan Sawyer talked about Rockbox in a previous issue. Now this is from Brian, whom sounds like he is in the Rockbox development team, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it here. It says, I thought I'd better drop a note in case no one else offers a correction to Dan Sawyer's assertion in his Philosophy and Fancy article in the June 2010 issue of Linux Journal. He says at one point that no discussion on the different approaches would be complete without mentioning embedded distributions. Versions of Linux and derivative operating systems such as Rockbox and Android designed to run on handheld devices and networking appliances, NAS servers, and dozens of other gadgets. And he goes on to talk about the fact that Rockbox is not Linux-based at all. I mean, not even a little bit. It's open source, and you can download everything, and what really stuck out to me, and, you know, of course, Dan replies and says, oh, you're absolutely right. You know, I didn't point it out clearly enough, but my point is I wonder other projects that we often assume might be running Linux because it seems Linux-y. I mean, Rockbox, embedded open source distribution of, you know, code, an operating system. I even said distribution instead of operating system. But are there other areas that maybe Linux is getting credit for that it doesn't deserve or that we just assume is Linux because of the philosophies behind it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, since Linux has become the poster child for open source software, you know, it's very easy just to assume if there's a popular piece of open source software that it's essentially, especially if it's an operating system of any kind, we now have the assumption that, well, it must be running Linux under the hood. They must have just taken Linux because there's so many devices out there, like, you know, for example, Android or so many mobile devices or small devices that run Linux. But yeah, there's still plenty of things like Rockbox that, you know, really aren't based on Linux at all. Or, you know, I was thinking something else. For example, a lot of people assume Nuplot, you know, the popular, very old graphing tool is part of the GNU project. But it never has been and never will be, as far as I know, part of the GNU project. They just happen to have GNU at the beginning of the name.
Yeah. I mean, and that's like, you know, when I named my distribution Microsoft Linux people thought. No, just kidding. No, but no, you're absolutely right. And I think that there's probably more than we realize. Now, there's a lot that we know are running Linux. You know, the Roku device, and like you said, Android phones, and like the Nook from Barnes & Noble is actually running Android, and the Kindle versions are Linux. They're not Android. They're actually running, you know, embedded Linux. But there's so many that are, we often assume that everything is. And, you know, we probably think everything should, but no knocks against Rockbox at all. It's fully open source. You can download it. It's just not Linux. So,
yeah, now I'm speechless. I don't know what to say to that. Yeah,
there's absolutely no segue. It's not Linux.
Does the Segway run Linux?
Let's assume it does, because
yeah, well, of course it does.
Of course it does. It's embedded. The Segway runs Linux, and you heard it here first, folks. And now, if we get cease and desist letters or something,
yeah, you can send all of your mailbag letters to
yeah, that's right, to linux@microsoft.com. No. So anyway, okay, thank you for listening to Linux Journal Insider for the September 2010 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-August. Now, last month, I actually said the wrong month and dubbed in the word July instead of June, that I misspoke myself. But subscribers, if you're listening to this, you already have a copy in your hands, or it's on your way. We hope you enjoy it. Next month is the Kyle issue. I mean, the command line issue. So make sure to tune in again, and don't forget to visit us at www.linuxjournal.com. I'm excited for next month, Kyle. How about you?
Oh, it's going to be gold.
All right. See you then.
Don't forget to visit our sponsor, www.giginetcloud.com. Once again, that URL is www.giginetcloud.com. Thanks again. We'll see you next month.